Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
This is Tom. I'm with Jeff. We're covering the British Bulldog in Wembley for the IC title. Biggest match of his career. One of Bret Hart's finest moments. This is going to be a good one. Jeff, how the hell are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. You know, just who doesn't love getting together once a week and talking about wrestling and hearing about wrestling? You know, it's just good stuff. And so
I love it. You know, here's the thing. If we didn't do this podcast, how much wrestling would we really watch? Because most of it's pretty painful right now. So yeah. This is what keeps me a fan of the business is watching this because, I mean, like the time we're recording this, I think it was yesterday, I thumbed through Raw. Dude. Yeah. So bad. So yeah. So this keeps us fans watching this.
Well, and we like trying to bring some of these. You know, we've done a lot of really great matches, and this is definitely one that is like, you know, top of the mountain, one of the best ever. And so
we need to cover some shitty matches soon.
We got to mix spoilers.
Some more infamous ones.
Yeah, and we've always said that, but we will let the, you know, a little teaser spoiler for the fans. We have been talking about it. We got some real shit matches coming up in the future here, and so some good stories, you know, that like, yeah, it'll be good stuff. And so we don't talk about just the greats around here, but we try to because it's more fun. So, but this is one of those matches. Like Tom, I'll kind of let you start it off on this one though. Of like, you know, just how come you wanted to, you know, talk about this one? This is one that I think we'd be talking about it for a while, but what was your kind of drive on this one?
It's so interesting because there's things that happened like yesterday that I don't remember, but I vividly remember this show. And you know, so this is 92. I'm 8 years old. You're 7 or 8 as well. And I just remember this show so well. Like I was going back and watching some of it earlier as I was doing my prep for the show. And it's like I remember the Million Dollar Man wearing a white outfit. Why do I remember that? I have no idea. I wish I could take that out of my brain and put something in that's more useful that would help me in life. But I remember that. I remember LOD, you know, riding down. I remember Mr. Perfect being such a little bitch during the Warrior Savage match. And I love both those guys. And I hated him. And I was so mad. And Flair. And then it was a DQ. I mean, I just remember so much from this show. It's not a WrestleMania. So, you know, like it's WrestleMania as I remember everything because I've seen them all a million times, but this is just one of those shows where I just remember so much about it. Like it was in another country. As an 8 year old, you don't realize there is another country out there. Right. And then yep. I just remember so much about this. The crowd was crazy. Remember, there weren't a lot of big stadium feel shows at this point. So this show was just so much different than most of what we had ever seen. So it really sticks out. And again, then you have Intercontinental Championship is the main event that like never really had ever happened on a major show before. Right. So there's just all the, yeah. There's just a lot that was unique and different about this show and about this match. And we'll get more into it. I don't want to, you know, go through all my thoughts from the match, but you know, there was just a lot different. And yeah. Obviously this match kicked ass. So I remember it vividly. I love it. I'm pumped to cover it. The match was great. The show was great. What about you?
I personally remember I was always a British Bulldog fan growing up. Like I didn't know the, you know, at the time, of course, like I mean, just like you and a lot of us, like we didn't know any of the like the behind the scenes or his comings and goings and things like that. Like, you know, and because he came and went from WWE, WAF a few times. But I remember like playing with his action figure and I still remember he had like, you know, the white and kind of blue pant, like, you know, the English, yeah.
got the British flag on there. And then also, like, I remember his hands were like open, like palms. So he was like he was doing the gorilla press. And I remember they just went up and down. They went like, that was it. That was his range of motion on that toy. And so, but I remember just always being a big Bulldog fan and just kind of thinking like, and that was actually, I remember the first time Braun actually did like the running power slam, like, that was the British Bulldog's move. Like that was what, you know, that was his finisher. That was what he would do. And so, and then just like the sheer, you know, like the power of the Bulldog. Like I always remember that of him doing just those, holding those fucking, you know, suplexes and the presses like for as long as possible and just thinking it was super cool when he did it. And so it's cool to kind of revisit this one and kind of dig in a little bit more. Cause as much as I was a fan as a kid, I haven't really done a whole lot of research on his career. So I was excited to dig into this one.
Dude, I had no idea. I would have never pegged you as such a British Bulldog mark.
I'm a mark, man, for the Bulldog. Like, man. Yep, it's just, who would have thunk it? But yep, that's the, I probably still have that toy somewhere in the basement, but yep, I oddly enough, I'm a Bulldog mark.
All right. Well, I'm excited. I am more excited for this now than
should be. Yeah.
I hear the enthusiasm in your voice.
For real.
For good old Davey Boy Smith. So with that, let's get right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
SummerSlam 1992. We're in London, England, Wembley Stadium. A worked WWE crowd size of 80,000. Who knows if that many were in there.
Well, but, you don't believe the numbers they put out, Tom? What are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, like, and the WrestleMania I went to in Dallas had, what, 105,000? Because they had to beat the 103,000? Yeah, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyways, but that was, I'll tell you what, the Dallas WrestleMania, man, it felt bigger. I mean, I'd been to that stadium before, but like for wrestling, it felt bigger. It was really, really cool. And that was a fun show. So we're in Wembley. Obviously we don't have pay-per-views that air in the United States that take place in London ever. So at this time, it's a really unique thing, you know, because of the internet, we didn't have spoilers. So they could actually have this show and then air it later, and it wasn't a big deal. But now with live, you either have to do different times, whatever. Jeff, I'll tell you, I think it would be really cool to just have a WrestleMania and just do a different time. Like, what would be the big deal in the network era if we had a WrestleMania in London, 6-hour difference from the East Coast, right? So, like, it would start at noon, which means, like, on the West Coast, maybe it starts at 9 a.m., okay, it's just different. Like, so what, right? You can always watch it later and avoid spoilers if you wanted. So, I mean, these fans are fucking crazy, and
we'll get into it too, like some of the Sky Sports and like how the broadcasting and things like that. Like, if you want to watch the New Japan, like Wrestle Kingdom, you're starting it like 4 a.m. So, yeah, either you're starting watching it that way or you wake up and you watch it then. Like, it's just how it is. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be fun, and I wouldn't mind if WrestleMania started at, you know, 9 a.m. on the West Coast, or you wouldn't mind if it started at noon. You just kind of restructure your day and whatever. But, man, I'll tell you what, how cool would it be to attend a WrestleMania in London? That would be badass.
Yeah. For real, even like Toronto would have been exciting because I know Toronto was in the mix too, but like,
yeah, you know, we'll get it like again. I know. That would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but yeah, like we got our passports. You and I are ready to travel.
Ready to go. So yeah. So these fans and for our listeners in London, you guys are fucking crazy. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I love the energy. I always love seeing you guys at WrestleManias. So we kick off the show. Like I said, Legion of Doom, massive pop. They're going to defeat Money Inc. 15-minute match. Legion of Doom comes out to the motorcycles. The word on the street is Hawk is like, on a major bender, didn't fly back with the crew, gets fired after this or quits. So not good there, but gets through the match just barely. There's some things in the match that he kind of botches. Bruce covers it in his podcast in great detail, but really interesting. Then we got a 4-minute match between Nails and Virgil. Nails would defeat Virgil. Jeff, what's your favorite Nails match?
Oh boy, this one, I don't know. This is probably closer to the bottom of the list. I'd have to really look it up. We will, when we talk about shitty matches, this is one that we will have to, we may have to find one and do.
Because, then we get a weird match. Rick Martel and Shawn Michaels go to a double count out. This is this weird heel versus heel match. I mean, these guys are both great workers. They're awesome. Rick Martel, kind of one of the more probably underrated guys in the history of the business. But it's just odd when they're both heels, right? And so this was, I always remember being an odd combination. Your tag team champions would retain. That's a natural disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon, defeating the Beverly Brothers, who were accompanied by the Genius. That was a great little heel tag team there. Crush defeating the Repo Man in 5 minutes. Then we get this just really odd match, odd angle. Ultimate Warrior defeats the world champion Randy Savage by count out. These guys went 28 minutes. So imagine a world title match in the middle of the card that goes 28 minutes and it ends in a count out. And just, I mean, and these are two of my, like, what, probably four favorites of all time. They're on my Mount Rushmore, and this just sucked. And it was just so poorly booked, and Warrior was gone not long after this. And it just, you know, just didn't work. Undertaker defeats Kamala by DQ. So you go count out, then you go DQ. Why? We can't give Undertaker a clean win against fucking Kamala. And then, the reason we're here, British Bulldog, Bret Hart, Intercontinental Champion, and we're about to watch that 25-minute match. So, Jeff, as you said, kind of some disputed attendance figures. We had a few different numbers in here, but one thing is for sure, this money or this match or this show made a shit ton of money. Over $3.5 million in revenue. They sell a ridiculous amount of merch. I wonder, back in the day in 1992, if you're a UK fan, could you even buy merchandise? Maybe you could, and it would cost you a fortune to ship it. I don't know. Maybe they had a distribution center there. I don't know. But obviously, probably the bulk of a fan's merchandise in this time were when they did the UK tour during the show. So you could just see every single fan, you know, 70, 80,000 people, you know, all buying a t-shirt. Well, that's how you get to a number that big. So really fun show, great atmosphere. Definitely some stuff on this card that sucked, but let's be honest. The fans were there for one reason, the main event. We know they got a great match. Can't wait to cover it. But Jeff, as always, storyline standpoint, how do we get to this epic matchup?
Yeah, so this is one where you had Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, had actually been away from WWF for a while. He had spent some time in Japan. When he came back, though, this was 1990, so we're talking SummerSlam 92, but 1990 when he came back from Japan. He, in his first push, and I had actually forgotten this, there was the British Bulldogs, which the tag team of Davey Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid.
Which it kind of sucks because the Dynamite Kid, and I, you know, admittedly, I haven't seen really, except for some highlights on YouTube, any of his stuff. But of course, people compare him to Benoit, maybe even like faster and better, but just a hell of a worker. But yeah, those two were an awesome tag team. But again, I mean, by all indications, their best stuff was done earlier in their career before, you know, he was so beat up. But I'd love to see some of his Calgary stuff. And, you know, Bret Hart's been on record of saying, like, the shit that, like, British Bulldog and Dynamite did in Calgary was just off the charts incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's why we'll add it to the list, go back one day. And so you actually had it. So he actually came back taking on just that moniker, though, of the British Bulldog. And so it was interesting because I kind of saw mixed things that he had actually trademarked the name, which is, it feels kind of odd that, maybe he owned the rights to that. Who knows? And so,
but that's what they did before Vince was paranoid about it. He got screwed enough times. Yeah. Because remember, Davey, when he went to WCW, was the British Bulldog. I mean,
right.
That's just what happened back then. I mean, Bret Hart owned his stuff.
Yeah. And so if you're able to kind of, so maybe that's truly the case. He kind of has it. And so, has that opportunity. So had him, came back. It was actually first at a live event, but then also, a couple weeks later when he made his television debut, really this whole time from when he returned in October of 1990 until this SummerSlam in 92, it's best that he was a mid-carder. Like, he never really bet, you know, big pushes for anything. Some of the competitors, you had like the Warlord. You had like, I see like this is, you know, before Mr. Perfect was truly like, you know, Mr. Perfect, these different opportunities, but he had that. And so, he was already though pretty popular in, you know, the US. But he was also a giant star in the UK. And so part of what played into this was the contract with Sky Sports and their like the television and the, you know, being able to be over there. And so it's just like, you know, Bret Hart and the association we make with Canada, like the British Bulldog and obviously, you know, Great Britain and, you know, having the Union Jack on his clothes and all this stuff. And so
and just as big over there as Bret was in Canada. I mean, big time.
And so there was a few times you had, like, we've talked about it before, that UK Rampage. He actually took on the Berserker. That was 1991. There was a battle royal at, you know, Royal Albert Hall, which he actually won that one. It was a 20-man battle royal. He eliminated Typhoon. That was 91 as well, too, late 91. And so he was really like the headline for these European tour shows because of his persona and who he was and all this other stuff. Like, he had won against the Mountie in a different battle royal in 92. He also beat IRS. So he had just a lot of different, you know, he was a star. That's what it was, like, you know, where he was from. And so, so he was really, you know, going into this show, really very high on the mountain in regards to, you know, how fans looked at him. And he was, had been working as a face, like, plain and simple. So, but now though, we kind of, you know, look at where Bret was. And so we've just recently on this show, go back, check it out. We talked about this Mr. Perfect Bret Hart match. It was SummerSlam 91.
So good.
As we talked about during that one, this was, I say, before Bret was really Bret as we all know him. That was, you know, getting that title, that was really the start of his rocket going off. And so, but he won that at SummerSlam the previous year, 1991. He went on then to win King of the Ring in 1991. Had successful pay-per-view defenses of the Intercontinental belt. And then he kind of started feuding, you know, with the Mountie as well too. And so you kind of see where that kind of that all plays into it, and kind of having that, but ended up dropping the strap, Bret did, to the Mountie eventually, but then, you know, won it back actually from Roddy Piper. And so, you know, we don't talk about the Intercontinental belt like this, we used to.
It was so good. I mean, you could argue, yep, like, think about the 1990, 91, 92, 93 Intercontinental title. Here's something I've never thought about, but as you're talking about it, you could argue that, let's just call it, without knowing everything right in front of me, let's just call it like 91 to 95. You could argue that the Intercontinental title matches, feuds, talent was better than the world title. I mean, think about it. Let's just take SummerSlam 95, for instance. Your world title match is Mabel Diesel. Your Intercontinental title match is Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon in a ladder match. 1992 SummerSlam. Do you want Warrior, Savage, no storyline, a bunch of interference, a count out finish in 28 minutes, or do you want this match? Right? Yeah. You know, so you start looking at all of these different, you know, eras, and you start thinking about the world title. You want a Diesel Sid match, or do you want a Shawn Michaels Jeff Jarrett match? So the Intercontinental title during this era, I mean, the wrestling was better, the talent was better, it was more interesting. Sometimes the storylines were better as well. I had never thought of it, but man, you could certainly argue it was better, and hell, maybe significantly better.
We'll come back to this. I think this is a good topic for us to talk about, because I've pulled up kind of who.
Yeah, was I probably the should champ. Have saved it for the match, but that's okay.
That's a good. It's a good talking point and launching point. I've got the list pulled up because this is a good one. So, so Bret too, kind of having the Intercontinental Championship. This too. So it was actually July 21st, 1992. This was the, of course, the famous Bret Hart Shawn Michaels ladder match. And so, you know, Bret at this point too, like, you know, really rising star. Absolutely. And so, and while the Bulldog, you know, didn't have a whole lot of, you know, title opportunities up until this point, like Brett was on like, you know, just the roller coaster rocketing to the top.
And well, so, just a quick side note is Bret Hart was really, really, really popular in Europe too. So it's, yes. You know, we talk about how big Bulldog was, but Brett was, I mean, like a massive star. He just always did better everywhere other than the US. Not that he wasn't a big star in the US.
And a little bit of, you know, just to set up the match too, before we're going to talk about this build specifically, both, like you said, both these guys were faces going into this too. And so that was an interesting dynamic. Like you said, we had like two heels earlier in the card. Like this was two faces going against each other and really it, like reading the room well to know what you were putting yourself in. You got two absolute rock stars that are going to be in the ring doing what they're doing. And so the setup for that already, just that alone is fantastic. So, but how this, so that was like kind of where, how they got to this point with their individual careers, but the storyline and kind of what happened between. So you have Brett having the championship because he had just beaten Sean about a month, 2 months previous to this, at, you know, for, during that ladder match. It was interesting because you actually had Davey, like the family getting involved. So you had Davey Boy Smith, who he was married to truly at that time, Diana Hart, was Brett's sister. And so you had the story around this was that the family was being torn apart. There were all these issues because, you know, the match was coming up. It was going to tear them apart, all these different things.
I always thought Diana was kind of sexy for an older woman.
I don't remember her, I'll be honest. And
now you'll see, so, and you'll see her on, you'll see her on the screen. I'll point her out to you.
But adding to this kind of stipulation, and this is when on TV, and I'm sure you remember it and those listening, like the Hart Dungeon was talked about all the time. Like, you know, I still have vivid memories that come back to me when they talk about the Hart Dungeon. I just imagine like this absolute, which it's, you know, now that we know what it was, just this pit of a room where they would go in and like, you know, just beat the hell out of each other. That was really a lot of what it was. But you had Bruce Hart supporting Davey Boy Smith, and then you had Owen Hart supporting Brett. So you had the family kind of, you know, playing roles in this as well too. So it's just kind of interesting. And so, you know, the whole family being a part of that. So, you know, and then of course you had Diana, like didn't know who to pick, all this stuff. So it just, you know, just kind of crazy, you know, how it just really all played out. And so, you know, there's mixed reports too from Brett himself that Davey Boy Smith had a staph infection before this, that, you know, he still wrestled with kind of that happening. Brett, I saw mixed reports that, you know, he didn't believe it, did believe it, you know, who knows, you know, how much we're getting worked with it too. But the match went on no matter what. Like we said, you know, because of Davey Boy Smith and the popularity he had in the UK, that, you know, they had the event at SummerSlam, like you said, at Wembley Stadium and doing this, and that these guys were going to be the main event. And so a little, you know, just a little build here, but they didn't need much more than that, which I thought was pretty good. And then, you know, we get right into it. So final thoughts, Tom, before we get into this match.
No, we got a lot to talk about though, man. I'm pumped for this.
We got some time. Let's do it.
All right. So if you want to watch it with us live or later on, SummerSlam 1992 on your WWE network, which apparently is not going to have more expensive tiers per the last investor's call. So you're going to have your $9.99 or your free version, and that's it. I don't even know what's on the free version, but obviously most of you, if not all you listening, are nut jobs like us, and you will have the $9.99 forever and love it, which I think is a hell of a value. So 2:17 on SummerSlam 1992, 2 hours, 17 minutes. SummerSlam 1992, if you're watching a bootleg version of it, Brett's giving his glasses out, and I got a funny story about that in a second. So Jeff, you ready to hit play?
Let's do this, my friend.
All right. So with that, it's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
So Bret Hart is giving his glasses to a kid. Jeff, the reason I bring this up is Vince McMahon, and don't ask me why he would do this, but on commentary, he goes, "What's happening now? The Hitman to the outside." Well, Vince, you've seen him give his glasses to kids about 1,000 fucking times, so you didn't need to ask surprised about it.
Right.
I don't know why. I just thought that was funny.
So looking to, they're kind of showing over the crowd right now, packed.
I mean, yeah, you see how like how many rows back it is and stuff. You probably couldn't see
to the rafters. Yeah, yes, yeah. It's, you know, it's like Wrestle Kingdom where they're just like stretched as far as the eye can see in the Tokyo Dome and just kind of doing this. And so yeah, so okay, so right away the two, you know, kind of pushing, locking up, kind of, you know, pushing off each other. So
you notice, like, I don't want to say the camera angle is different, but does it seem like it's the camera's a little bit more level than they shoot it now?
Yeah, and I read an interesting article, I think it was a year or two ago, and it was they were discussing like how WWE films versus like New Japan films.
Okay.
And how like the quick cuts, we all know the Kevin Dunn and the quick cut, you know, you could, you know, get a, you know, motion sickness with how often he's doing some of those cuts. But New Japan actually films a big bump to Bret to the outside.
Yeah. And you notice how they have like the
gap. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the ring's elevated. I probably just, so yes, people can see further away.
So, but New Japan actually films from like, there are some kind of straight on shots like this, but they actually film from like the apron level. And I was reading, it's because they want their wrestlers to look bigger than they are and kind of add a little bit more of like that persona to them. And so they actually shoot them from low angles because it makes them look that much more kind of menacing and bigger. So, which is interesting because yeah, we're so used to this WWE and kind of how they film it, but, it's just one of those where, yeah, why not? You know, it's one of those little things that, you know, we're not experts in. But, you know, people with film background and things like that, I'm sure would know a little bit.
Yeah, but if you look at this shot, like right now, this like kind of wide shot, it just looks a little bit different. Like it. I think it, I don't know. Just, I feel like I'm closer to the action.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. And that's part of why New Japan films some of the way they do is because, yeah, so, so getting right into it, it's kind of technical at this point, kind of some roll-ups happening, things like that, just kind of already kind of putting in the work and going after each other. So,
and so if you had an interesting sound, you let me know and we'll listen to some sound.
So we get close to the end here, we're going to want to hear the pops for sure. But so you made an interesting point. So I pulled up kind of.
Thank you. Hey, Jeff, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know what? Hey, we're here to be friends. You know, it's we enjoy that. We're here to have some fun.
What was my interesting point?
That talking about which would you prefer, like what matches and kind of who was in them and things like that. And so going back to 1988, you're looking at the WWF champions. It was the belt truly really only kind of changed hands at WrestleMania for those first couple of years. It was actually, if you start in 1988, it wasn't until Royal Rumble in 91 when, like, it's
just Slaughter outside, and that was just to get it on Slaughter so you could get it back on Hogan without doing the Warrior Hogan rematch.
So from early 1988 until really the end of 1991, it was Savage, Hogan, Warrior, Undertaker had it for a very brief period, less than a week, and then Sergeant Slaughter had it for about 2 months. And so that kind of time frame, but then you start getting into two, like when this match was happening in 92, you had Ric Flair and Randy Savage were kind of holding the belt. So it was Ric Flair, Randy Savage, Hogan, and Warrior were really from 19, really a 4 year time span over a little over that, were those people going after that belt. And so you were not getting a whole lot of, like, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of difference between who you were seeing in those main events. Now, could you argue that yes, those guys were, you know, the big draws, but at the same time, like some of these matches, because then you start getting into, it would have been late 92. So you had Bret, you had Yokozuna for a minute, you had Hulk Hogan, and then you had Yokozuna for a long time, and then you're back to Bret, and then you got Diesel, you got Bret, you got Shawn Michaels, so, and you got Psycho Sid, you got Shawn Michaels again, you got Bret again. So, like, you know, and now we're at 1997 at this point. So that same kind of, you know, 4 year time span where you had those four wrestlers in it, where Hogan was really dominating it. And then you start getting into a little bit of difference, but then it's Bret and Shawn really in a lot of ways. So, you know, kind of looking at who was having the belt and kind of what they were doing there. So it's just kind of interesting that, you know, yeah, if you wanted to see something outside of like the big names, you had to look at some of these, I say, lower tier, mid tier belts, because the matches weren't happening at that high level.
See, there's Diana right there. Kind of sexy, huh?
Yeah, I know, man.
Like, I'm not saying she's Sunny or Sable, but
the '90s. Yes. And so, but it's a good job. You don't see that. When was the last time we did see something like that where they kind of, you know, show the distraught, you know, valet or wife or something like that?
Dude, correct me if I'm wrong, but the last wife that I can think of was when they had the Wendy Styles thing, AJ's wife.
There was that. They remember they accidentally showed Britt Baker, Adam Cole's in the crowd too.
Then we might get, and you know, we're getting a son. We're getting Mysterio's son at SummerSlam. That's kind of interesting.
I actually did enjoy the Wendy, Joe, AJ storyline, because I think Joe is fantastic on the mic, and we're going to cover one of his matches soon. But yeah,
hey, how long? Do you know how long Joe's out for? Is he still hurt? Is he coming back soon? Do you know? I know nothing.
I don't know if he's cleared or not. I think it's one of those where we just don't like, you know, we're getting work no matter what. So
I mean, I'd really like for him to have a title reign at some point.
So looking at the WWE Championship and who had those matches, if you look at kind of the same time frame of who was holding the Intercontinental belt. And so looking for like from the 90s, you had really prior to the 90s, you had Honky Tonk Man, Ultimate Warrior had it through the late 80s. But then starting in like the 90s, you had Mr. Perfect, the Texas Tornado, which I was a Texas Tornado mark too. The Mr. Perfect again, Bret Hart winning in 91, you had the Mounties, which we talked about in this one, Roddy Piper as well too. But then you start getting into after this, like, you know, no spoiler on this match, who's going to win, but eventually you get to Shawn Michaels trading it then with Marty Jannetty, your boy, in the news recently for not the greatest reasons.
Do you ever watch Jay Leno?
I used to, yeah.
Okay, do you remember when he used to do something called Stupid Criminals?
I do, yes.
Yeah, that's like, that's what I thought of about Marty Jannetty. I'm like, that is the dumbest fucking way in history to get arrested if it turns out that he gets arrested for this.
As we're recording this one, the most recent update was he made the guy disappear. He didn't kill him. So, okay, well, good luck to you. So, but then you had Razor with it as well too, Diesel, Jeff Jarrett getting into it as well too. So it was interesting, like kind of looking at it from this perspective of who had those belts and kind of what matches you wanted to see. Like if you went to the top of the card, you weren't seeing these guys. And so like, and they're already doing a good job of kind of selling this match. You know, they've already, you know, gone talking to him right now. You know, I always love when you can spot them talking to each other. But kind of slowing the pace down a little bit too, of kind of the Bulldog kind of fighting off the sleeper hold from Bret. And just kind of what they're doing here. So, but yeah, just kind of interesting, you know, especially this is the first time I've looked at the list in this way from this perspective. And like, you know, like you said to the original point, like I rather would have watched these guys than Hogan and Warrior another time.
I mean, if you went, and I'm not even saying like just better, like Meltzer wrestling, but I mean like actually like the more entertaining, better, like storyline wrestlers action. If you went and looked at IC versus world title, like during that era, like how many times was the IC title the better? And I'm not just saying like technical, like five-star match, but like how often was it just more interesting? Like, hey, I'd rather watch these two guys wrestle. I like this storyline better. And the match was better in the IC. Man, that was a really, really stiff kick.
It's
definitely starting to pick up. Really good match so far.
Well, and you got to think too, like you said, like the WWE Championship isn't the main event.
Oh, which it makes Bulldog.
Storyline, it makes sense why this wasn't. You don't see the Bulldog very often anymore. It's a good move though. it makes sense why this was the main event over the championship, which, you know, nowadays you always wonder, are they actually going to pull the trigger and do that right? And this is one too, where this is the appropriate final match.
Oh, Bulldog going to the top rope. I don't know if I've ever seen him. Oh God. It's like trying to do a headbutt and just fell. That was kind of fun.
Ooh, that looked rough. Yep.
Yeah. Bulldog coming out at the beginning. Dude, the place goes nuts for him. Okay. Nuts. Lennox Lewis is carrying the flag, which was kind of cool. But the dude, that music, man, just one of probably like my favorite entrance musics. Like, I don't know, just in terms of like, especially stuff with like no words, but it's like, think about that. And I, you know, again, you talk about my laundry list of stuff of reasons I hate the current product, but just think of the entrance music at this point. Bulldog, awesome. Flair, awesome. Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, you know, the Bulldog, Rowdy Piper. Like, this stuff wasn't like highly produced, but it was just so good, man. I just love the entrance, a lot of the entrance music from this era. Just, it's so iconic. And now I just feel like too much of this shit sounds the same. Like, you know, you play like an NXT song, I'm like, I don't even, there could be 10 different guys.
And this was Lennox Lewis, part of this to promote the match. And for, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know, but famous boxer who, like, from London. And so that was a big part of like them selling this match. And oh boy, ripping Bulldog from behind. That was crazy. You know, again, just trying to build up that persona of like, you know, where we're at and, you know, being in the UK and kind of having this match. And so it was a big deal for him to be carrying the flag and coming out with it.
All right, so we're on the outside now. Bulldog takes it on the post. Brett doing a little bit of work there. Hope they don't get counted out. Another thing that I was thinking about. British Bulldog, major star, because this is his hometown, right?
Yep.
We don't really get much hometown stuff anymore. Like Bret Hart in Canada, CM Punk in Chicago, Steve Austin really anywhere in Texas, Kurt Angle in Pittsburgh, right? Like there were just certain places that guys were super, super popular. Obviously some of your Canadian guys like Kevin Owens in Toronto. It's awesome, right? Or I don't know if he's Toronto or Quebec, but where, you know, I mean, I just did some of these guys were their hometown. There aren't many guys that get big hometown pops now. And I don't know, like, I think you need to like own it more of like when a guy's from a place, because it just gives you a little extra storyline stuff, right? Like yeah. Really lean into these guys. Like everyone kind of knows Rollins is from Iowa, but like really like, hey, when we're in Des Moines, like Seth Rollins is the guy. When we're in Toronto, this guy's the guy, right? If you did that for more cities, I think it would help, honestly. I think it's missing a little bit now.
Yeah, and Kevin Owens is Quebec, so you nailed it.
Okay, I couldn't remember if Toronto or Quebec. Okay, good. Thanks for checking.
So, I got you.
But like, think about like CM Punk in Chicago, man. Like, but that, like, then you can build a pay-per-view around it and have him going for the title or defending the title. Like, there's just a lot more you can do when certain guys have like their town. Cena in Boston, I think they kind of leaned into that a little bit, but not a ton.
Well, and they've and we've known over the years, like, you know, it's always like the hometown person should get the win. And so, like, you know, and I guess I've so remember like Bailey in like San Jose, like, you know, and like her being her hometown, but I think she, like, you know, a couple of years ago she got like a loss. And so, like, there always used to be that get the hometown pop. And I think, like, to your point, I think you're right of like they just don't play it up like they could. Because yeah, it could be a big thing. Because even like it's crazy, you know, like Rhino is like from Michigan, that's Detroit, Southeast Michigan area, still very involved as well too. So like I've always been a little bit of like a Rhino fan because he's a hometown guy.
It's so funny because I was thinking about that example too. I didn't bring it up because I was like, it's not really a big stuff.
I know. He showed up. It was a match at the town next to mine where I grew up. There was a show in like, it was in an ice arena, like an ice rink. And so like he would like, and it was, you know, they melted down the ice, had, like, but like that's where he, like he's doing a show in like a little town, like community center ice rink, like, you know, that type of shit. Like, and he's still, you know, out there and doing it and things like that. And I always love when we get a rhino resurgence and he kind of comes back and things like that. And so, but he's one where, you know, and I think there is, at least for me, like, and I'm sure for a lot of wrestling fans, like there is a little bit of like pride in that as well too, of like being able to have like that hometown person that, you know, you can kind of cheer for and be a fan of, because it's just not a big deal. Like Kevin Nash is another one too, like from Detroit as well.
Another great example I forgot about was Ric Flair in Charlotte. Like think about how many moments we've gotten whenever they've been there. So you need more of that. Goldberg in Atlanta. Oh, he played for the Falcons. He went for the title. The place went fucking nuts when he won the title. So,
And that's what, and even if they're a heel, you can play that up too. Like that's okay of like shitting on the town.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, we're not even getting like a ton of that anymore either. So
Brett's kind of working like a heel a little bit now.
Well, he's getting booed. You see the thumbs down in the crowd and the fan, you know, fans kind of going after him a little bit. And this one too. So we've got about 15 minutes now. Like these guys are really going at it. There hasn't really been, it's a slower match, but it's working too. And so we haven't talked too much about the match, but we have like, we're back in a sleeper hold as well too. So we don't need to, you know, be sharing every time they're putting each other in sleeper holds. But
do you know who was the sponsor of this show?
Who was the sponsor of the show?
Ico Pro.
Oh, because it was at the opening logo showed it. Yeah. Yeah. And so, Tom, huge Ico Pro fan. So yeah absolutely.
I love my Ico Pro shirt. You do. All right. So here tell me what happened last year's SummerSlam.
You have no idea,
and neither do I. I was just thinking, so I'm thinking about this. I'm like, I remember all this stuff that happened on the show, right? I could have, not all of it, but I could have named most of what happened on this show and probably most SummerSlams and almost every WrestleMania, right? Like, I remember this match and this show vividly. I couldn't tell you a damn thing that happened at SummerSlam last year. Now, if you put the card up, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember that match. Oh, I remember that match. I have no idea. I don't know where it was. I don't know if it was in Brooklyn or it was in LA. I couldn't tell you one thing that happened. In fact, was it Toronto and Trish and Charlotte had their match?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Then I remember one thing from SummerSlam last year, and I could be wrong. Like, it's just so funny how you remember this stuff so vividly. And again, I know there's reasons for it. There's way more programming now and all that, but I think it's funny that like I could rattle off almost everything that happened on this show, but I couldn't tell you one match from last year.
Yeah, that was Trish had the really good match actually. Yeah,
that was great.
But yeah, I think that's a good point. It speaks to like the building of stars. Like, you know, they were building stars back then. Like, you know, I say back then, it was 1992. We're not that old, but like, you know, these two guys, like, you know, Brett went on to be the champ. Like, you know, Davey Boy, we'll talk about in the aftermath of what happened with the Bulldog, kind of unfortunate circumstances. But, you know, Brett was being built into this huge star at this point, winning the Rumble, kind of doing these different things. So, again, this just the slow sleeper holds. It got Brett just.
I like that. He breaks it up and then he puts it back on. That was kind of cool. Do you remember when Bulldog came back and had that run? He was like wrestling in like blue jeans. I can't remember the year. I don't even want 99, 2000.
Yeah, when he came back. Yeah, and that was like part of the gimmick was not wearing the Union Jack pants anymore. Yeah,
I know, man. I wish that would have worked out better because I loved him. I was like so pumped to see him back, but didn't last long, unfortunately. Oh.
Brett getting tied up in the ropes a little bit there. That was looked painful, but you know, doing the work there, it looked good as well too.
So if my memory serves me correct, this was probably the only second time there was a major main event face versus face on like a big WWE show. You know, Hogan Warrior, okay? WrestleMania 6.
So you're talking then, like the major shows, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying like major show, like a, you know, one of the big four pay-per-views where they had two faces going at it in the main event. And ironically, you had it twice in this because you had Warrior Savage and then you had this. So you had kind of your two main matches were two sets of baby faces going at it. And that like never happened back then.
Well, and I'm kind of looking at just like what the main events were from like some of these SummerSlams. So even if you take like just kind of just SummerSlam, you had Warrior and Rick Rude in 1990. You had Hogan and the Warrior versus, you know, Sergeant Slaughter, Colonel Mustafa in 91. Yep. You know, then you had this match. You had Yokozuna and Lex Luger, Undertaker versus Undertaker. I don't know if you got how you'd face and heal that one, but that was the fake Undertaker match.
Hey, maybe we'll wait. Maybe we'll wait a year or two to cover that one. I don't want to do it this summer, please.
Yeah, sorry, everybody. But it's on our list, but that's when we are, we're not in a rush to cover. So, and they also had Diesel and Mabel. Like, and so, yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, just it, part of it's reading the crowd. Like, you need that. Like, as a face-face, this match works. So, Bulldog kind of getting that second win now. A little bit of sound here. The crowd's starting to lose their shit.
Oh, Heenan on commentary too. So good. Going for the power slam. Such a great finisher in that era. It's a terrible finish for Strowman, but in this era, it was a great finisher. Look, they're going nuts.
Yeah, they're all.
Strowman hits it.
Power slam. Yep, we got the power slam, but Brett kicking out. Brett kind of Brett.
Wow. And this, I didn't remember that. I didn't remember that. That's great.
Building the story a little bit here, like this is how it should be, like, you know, yep, and gotta overcome it. And I think even at this point, like, you know, we know how this one's gonna end, but you didn't know, like, Brett was a really
maybe some of our younger fans don't remember this, so
I haven't spoiled it.
I was told we have to stop. I'm serious. I was told we have to stop spoiling matches because some people don't know the results. So
okay, all right, well, we won't spoil it, but this is one too. Again, like, you know, Brett coming in as the champ, you would, you know, if we were kind of booking German suplex from Brett.
I wasn't expecting a German suplex out of nowhere. Man, this is starting to heat up. I'm serious. This is good. I mean, it was slow so far, but man, it's starting to heat up now. Fans going nuts. Wasn't expecting a German suplex by Brett onto the Bulldog.
It's the big moves, yeah. And so it's that second win type stuff where, you know, you get that flashes of greatness that you don't expect, but it's good stuff. You got Bulldog blocking now as well, too, as Brett's trying to get him a suplex, but then Bulldog reversing it. Yeah, but you just, you know, because you and I every once in a while, you know, I know we used to do predictions a lot more before big matches, but, you know, just don't always expect, what's he doing here? Brett, we got him up on the top rope. Is it going to be the superplex? Oh, my goodness, the superplex. Yep. 1-2. Nope, not yet. We still don't know.
Has anyone ever won a match in the history of wrestling with a superplex?
I don't know. I'm sure they have. That one actually looked pretty smooth. I feel like, you know, so many times they're not comfortable, and so you see them like kind of hesitating and setting it up forever, like trying to get it. But that was like,
yeah, that was pretty
right
quick.
Into it, real smooth. Yeah, running the row. The double clothesline. Don't see that anymore either. Like, this is a real throwback on some of this. The double clothesline, both guys, both men taking each other out. Like, it's one of those things. You don't see it.
Wow. Yeah, double clothesline. Ooh, look at this. Ooh, I like this.
So
going for the sharpshooter while he's
laying on his back.
On the ground. Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to get
kind of like a little bit like what he did the year before to Mr. Perfect.
He's done this a few times, yeah. There it is, and he got it locked in, the sharpshooter.
I mean, Heenan, when he was like in his prime, he was so good at commentating.
Yeah, and we've talked about him so many times, just how good is the heel kind of commentary. You got TV Boy Smith crawling to the ropes now, getting there, and so Brett having to break the hold. Just really good stuff, so yeah.
Diana cheering for her husband over
Her brother.
I see our favorite, the wrestling pal of the Ultimate Warrior in the crowd as well, too. Like, I think I need to bring back the wrestling pals because you and I would buy them. Quick, small, or you're rolling them up, and there it is. Goodness.
Wow. They are going crazy. And new.
Fink, the classic call from the Fink. Yep. Everybody's on their feet. They're waving the flag. They're cheering. Like, everybody's just going nuts.
I mean, sometimes these like pinfalls out of nowhere aren't well executed, and this was perfect, right? They kind of both got out of each other's finish, and it was out of nowhere, but the fans, you know, go crazy like immediately.
Well, I like the tassels on her jacket. We haven't talked about that. Oh, my goodness.
So no music good yet. Stuff.
So kind of looking,
interesting. Yeah, they're not playing his music.
Bulldog kind of holding the belt. Brett still slowly getting up. And kind of, you know, waiting to see what happens here. Yep. It could just – it's – the storytelling is so good. Like,
it's so good.
The shot right now, you can see the whole ring with Bulldog holding the belt, Brett sitting on like the right side of the ring, just kind of, you know, upset and dejected.
I didn't remember this, but so they don't play his music. It's kind of, this is really interesting. And I say that like in a good way, but.
And here's part of it. Where British Bulldog extending his hand to Brett. And Brett leaving a ring. Oh, wait. The fake out. What's going to happen? Oh, Brett maybe leaving again here. So close. He got one leg in the ring, one leg outside. Diana with the tears. What a look right there. Good job. And again, extending his hand out, the Bulldog kind of holding the belt. You know. You just don't see this anymore. And there it is. And the crowd losing their mind as, again, the embrace and the handshake.
And then they play the music, and then they go nuts again. So it's like you get that out-of-nowhere finish. Place goes crazy. But then there's, like, this delay. And now his wife's in there, and then we're going to have, like, the iconic thing of them all hold their hands up. But that was – I didn't remember that. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, the storytelling there and like the setup and how they did it. It's like the fake out of the production graphic. You know, you got to wait till the very end. You got to see what happens until the screen fades to black. And so
it's not often that the music doesn't play right after the match. Like I think of like, you know, like Lesnar Taker as an example. But this was like, this is great. That she gets in the middle. Really, really well done.
So good, awesome. Good stuff here. So,
all right, let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, dude.
Fantastic stuff.
Initial thoughts.
Yeah, just fantastic. Like the storytelling and that, and I've said it a lot. Like if you can tell that story in the ring, it didn't need a lot of build, but telling just a fantastic story between these two guys, like just incredible. It really was. How about you?
Yeah. It's like I went into this knowing that it was going to be great, remembering bits and pieces. Gosh, I'd argue it might even be better than I remembered, man. This is really good.
We've got fireworks going off now too in the ring for those of you that may have turned it off, but not just in the ring, but all over the arena too, the fireworks going nuts.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. So what happened? Of course you have the Bulldog, you know, no more spoilers, you know, the Bulldog victorious in this one over Brett with just the quick roll up after about 25 minutes. And so, you know, just really cool how this kind of played out and kind of what happen here. And then just that little bit of storytelling in the end of, you know, like you said, not playing the music, you know, not knowing what was going to happen. If Brett was going to shake his hand, are we going to get a heel turn? Who knows? Like, you know, but staying the face, you know, bringing the family together, things like that. It just faded to black with the Bulldog holding the belt up and the kind of the flag waving behind him. And so just a really cool moment, kind of how it all played out and things like that. And so interesting kind of behind the scenes here. Originally, that Brett was going to lose the belt to Sean before SummerSlam, but when they decided to hold this pay-per-view in London, they decided to hold off and give it to Davey Boy Smith at that point. So
Brett would have got, I'm sorry, Sean would have got the title off Brett at SummerSlam had it not been here or before SummerSlam.
And like the report I read, it was before SummerSlam. And so who knows, like, you know, eventually, you know, whether it was just kind of temporary, but like Michaels did eventually win the belt. It was actually November. And so it wasn't that long after this because, and part of the issue here was, you know, British Bulldog was actually released. And so this is kind of the, you know, the sad behind the scenes, the kind of things we hear about. And at the different times in wrestling, it was actually him and the Ultimate Warrior released. It was when like human growth hormone was a much bigger thing.
That's right.
And kind of taking that to be bigger. And so both him and the Warrior were released kind of around this time frame in November. You had Bulldog though, going back to like Japan, he had a stint in WCW. He came back to WWE. He had all kinds of different, you know, he bounced around quite a bit. Like you said, he had the jeans phase as well too. Eventually though, it was 2002, passed away. It was 39 years old. And so, you know,
God, so young, man.
And I don't think I realized how young he was because, you know, of course I remember him like dying, but like 2002, yeah, he was 39 years old. Like that was it. Like, you know, I was graduating high school, you know? And so, yeah, just sad to think about that. You know, too many times that happens. And so,
and luckily I, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but luckily it happens way less now. Like we're not losing guys. Like we did. I mean, let's just hope that's over with, you know?
And absolutely.
Guys just lived hard, man. Just a different time.
Well, and now we've got the sad flip side to that of these guys are living long lives. And so we're losing them just to old age and things like that. And so, but give us good memories. And so that's all, you know, yeah, all we can kind of hope for. So, so Brett with this though, even though Bulldog, you know, released and kind of, you know, kind of had to leave, Brett, the rocket kept going. And so you had, you know, defending the title against, against Shawn Michaels, Survivor Series 1992. He beat Razor Ramon, Royal Rumble 1993. You know, he eventually, again, and this was the WrestleMania 9, which we've kind of talked about this a little bit, him losing the belt to Yokozuna, who then immediately won the belt, or Hulk Hogan then immediately won the belt off of him. And so just kind of, you know, how that one played out, that's a story for a different day. And so, you know, and so, but Brett really actually then after that going out of ring, King of the Ring twice, or you know, winning King of the Ring again. And so being one of the only or the only King of the Ring two-time winner, right? I believe. Yes.
I think so.
So just, Brett, you know, and then we'll save that time frame for, you know, we have more stories and more matches to cover for him at that point. So just kind of interesting how this all played out and kind of, you know, what happened. And good stuff for Brett, you know, absolutely. And then the Bulldog, you know, fortunate, you know, of course, and sad what happened. But, this moment right here was probably, if not the one of the top moment in his career. Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, Davey Boy's run as Intercontinental Champion came to an end this fall. But it was to Shawn Michaels who was starting to really take off, man. And I was obviously 8-year-old Tommy was really, really pumped about that.
And for that, it might be a match we cover for a different day. It was actually Michaels and Bulldog actually had a match. It was 1996 at King of the Ring. It was a long one. It was about 40, 45 minutes. And so that was another interesting one too. One of the another very good match from the Bulldog. But
yeah,
that's one that we can add to the short list. King of the Ring 96 was just a big one no matter what. So.
And that was one where Diana was kind of involved, and it was like rumored she was sleeping with Sean. Like, that's what they were implying. And yep, obviously they weren't comfortable doing the angle. I mean, that was a whole dramatic thing. And that match and the feud was actually pretty damn good.
Yeah. And so, and that was one, it's just interesting kind of how that all played out. So, yeah. So getting into the reviews, kind of what we have on this one, kind of what was going on. And so, as we've been adding this, PWI, Brett was number 5 this year, 1992.
For 1992, okay.
Yep. And so, that doesn't surprise me. Bulldog was 30. They actually, and then I not surprised by this after I read it, but this was actually the match of the year for 1992 from the PWI. So
interesting.
Now it's interesting too, because now Brett was 5 this year in 1992. The next year, 1993, Brett was number 1. So we were right on the cusp and the edge of him becoming one of the great, the best there ever will be. And so, we really seeing just absolute classic. And so, and then he even said, like, at, you know, when he was inducted to the wonderful WWE Hall of Fame, which we don't talk about enough around here, but.
Well, and Bulldog should have gone in this year.
Yeah, it would. Yep, exactly. And so,
I guess they're just going to postpone a year, because remember there was talk of doing it SummerSlam weekend. Obviously, that's not happening. So I guess they're just going to wait a full year.
And that was one that, yeah, like, you know, and it's, you know, because there's a big class this year too. And so
wasn't it Batista, NWO, Bulldog? Who am I missing?
JBL, Jushin Liger, and the Bellas.
Wow, look at you! Right off the top of your head, that was good. Yeah, that was a big class.
I'm a big Hall of Fame mark as well, too. Dude, we're learning all kinds of things about me today. Bulldog Mark and Hall of Fame. So I was actually just looking it up the other day because Batista posted something about what he was going to wear, and I caught it on Instagram. You know, the little things you learn. But anyways, so that's a weird rabbit hole, but that's okay. So what were the write-ups on this one? Of course, the Wrestling Observer, like, this was the match of the night, kind of hands down, beating even the WWE or WWF Championship.
Was that the second best match?
Yeah. And so this is one. And so kind of write-ups on this one. Probably the best WWF singles match on a major show since the Steamboat Savage in 1987. So 5 years later, still, this is certainly one of the best match promotion or best major promotion matches of the year in this country. 4.5 stars, very high marks on that one. And so, among the most interesting notes of the show was that there was not one mention of Hulk Hogan. The show ended with Davey Boy Smith, Bret Hart, and Diana Smith, Bret's sister, in the ring with the fireworks going off. The apparent representation was the WWF equals family value, since the company image has taken a major tumble. In addition, the ending has to be an attempt to establish Smith and Hart as wrestlers capable of drawing on top during the 90s. Clearly, Savage is on his way out, and his drawing power over the summer seems to indicate he's not the answer. Where is the guy they are building around? And there is more and more talk that Hogan isn't coming back at any time in the near future. And if he has a short-term future in the business, it's going to be with New Japan. Even if he does, it probably would be only for pay-per-view shows rather than go on the road on a regular basis, at least at this point, which means new headliners are needed. My own feeling, Smith is given the nod for his popularity in the UK, because for this country, Hart has a lot more when it comes to charisma, wrestling ability, and is a far better interview. But as it happens in great matches, he probably improved his standing while at the same time doing the job.
So he said Hogan's not coming back, which he did. He's saying if he came back you came back for WrestleMania the following year. Okay, so he said he wasn't coming back, and he did. He was saying if he came back, it would be to New Japan, which he didn't work in New Japan. And he said, what, his career was almost over. So, but he wrestled at WrestleMania 9. Then he was at King of the Ring. Then he debuted for WCW. Then he made more money than any wrestler had ever made in a year because he led WCW in the NWO. And he had 4+ star matches many times in the WWF following. I mean, it's just so funny. Like, it's just,
he did do a small stint in New Japan from 93 really into early 94, but then yeah, 94 that summer, and we've talked about it, like he went to WCW. That was it.
Yeah. So. But I mean, it's just so funny that like we thought Hogan was done at that point, and look what he went and did. 2-year run in WCW, turning that company around. Then after 2 years, the NWO, and the rest is history. And then he went back to the WWF and a lot of matches. Wrestled Orton, wrestled Shawn Michaels, wrestled McMahon at WrestleMania, wrestled The Rock at WrestleMania. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that guy did after 1993, which is just crazy.
Yeah. So one other little write-up I thought was kind of interesting. It makes for good talking points for us, if nothing else. Truly historic show. I think that people tend to overrate this when they call it the greatest SummerSlam of all time. While Brett/Bulldog is probably the greatest match in SummerSlam history, too much of this card lacked. The opener was solid. Shawn and Martel was fun. And the WWF title match was great. But Kamala, Taker, Crush, Repo, and especially Nails Virgin all sucked. What? Shit on Nails, unfortunately.
You called him Virgin. It's Virgil.
Virgil. That's what I said. Nails Virgin. Okay. He's definitely not a virgin. Slinging the meat sauce. So, however, the main event makes up for a ton of it, as does the atmosphere and spectacle here. It felt like a WrestleMania, a must-see for any fan. So, Tom, I will let you go first, my friend.
Yeah, so it did feel like a WrestleMania. The card was not that great, but you forget it because the atmosphere was so incredible. The main event was, so it kind of fools you a little bit. But, dude, it was awesome. So, payoff score, my thoughts. There wasn't a big build. Not that that's the end of the world, but the build wasn't massive. But it had that big fight feel. Hometown guy, big crowd, the entrance, and Lennox Lewis with the flag, and the place goes nuts, and the biggest show they've ever had in the country. And there's just so many things happening here. Like I said, the first thing I said after the match was, this was better than I remembered, better than I expected. I went into it with super high expectations. I was kind of thinking I was going to be let down. This is just top of the mountain wrestling, right? Crowd, great match, memorable moments, the visuals of the fireworks and Diana and Brett making the face first face thing work, Davey Boy winning his first singles title. Man, I'm going to give this a 9 on my payoff score, which means it wasn't perfect. First 3/4 of the match were a little slow. Wasn't a massive build to this. Wasn't even a massive aftermath. So that's what keeps it from a 9 to a 10. But man, really, really good shit. What about you?
I am a 9.5.
Okay.
So you and I really along the same lines here. I think that, yeah, there could have been, there was a spot or two that wasn't great. It wasn't perfect wrestling, but overall it's nitpicky. I think that, yeah, like the build, it didn't really need much of a build though. And I think I've always been a huge proponent of, if you're telling the story in the ring, like, you know, that's what I want to see, that I want it to play out over the course of the match, where like, yeah, all these bullshit finishes and things like that. I want to know, like, by the end of the match, and occasionally it's justified, but I want to know by the end of the match, like, what, you know, give me the reward, like, you know, not to be cliche, but like, give me the payoff, you know, don't keep jerking me around on some of this stuff. This was one, it was deserving. It was worthy. Like, you know, it made sense for, you know, what's the alternative? You have Brett win like in that moment.
Couldn't.
Like, No, you couldn't. And so, like, you know, kind of looking at it from that perspective, that's just like, there's no way. So I think that, you know, it just makes a ton of sense to, you know, how they did this, how it played out. Like, and then, yeah, you didn't really need a ton of aftermath actually, because that was it. That was the conclusion to the story. And just kind of, you know, moving on from there. And, you know, for, you know, some guys better, you know, how it turned out than others. But, you know, just kind of interesting though. And so, yeah, I am sticking to the high score, 9.5. It was that good. And this is one where there's been very few matches where you and I say, like, if you had to pick that match to show somebody to explain what wrestling is, like, this is one that I would put on that list.
I think that's very fair.
And I think that's what we need to start tracking that a little bit, you know, better. And, you know, cause you know, like, you know, this is one that you could show and they would understand, you know, what is happening, where they are at, kind of what's going on and things like that. Like, and I think there's very few matches that achieve that. And I think this is one of them.
Yeah. And again, I the aftermath, I'd argue, you know, it's funny. We're both like, yeah, there was no aftermath. And it's like, well, yeah, but then they formed the Hard Foundation and, you know, yeah. I mean, there really is a story, not immediately afterwards, but there is a really cool story, you know, years later. I again, being super nitpicky, I'll just say that, you know, if you wanted to make this the perfect match, I think it could have been a little bit more at the beginning. The other thing I'll say is I would have liked that killer video package before of like, you know, hey, these two family and, you know, they were in each other's weddings or whatever, right? Like I would have liked a little bit more like WWE drama story, like to really, really hype it up. Like give me the Highway to Hell 98, Stone Cold versus Undertaker thing, right? Like just give me that again. If you're talking like perfect match and you wanted to show it to someone that didn't watch wrestling, like give me that ridiculous vignette, that ridiculous hype video prior, and then you're like, holy shit, these guys are brother-in-laws and she's going to be there and who's she going to cheer for, and wait, this is in the guy's hometown and, you know, the last time he was there he lost. I don't, you know what I mean, like there was more of a story than they told.
Yep.
So, all right, but that's it. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, good stuff. So, of course, as always, like, make sure to check us out on that social media, just at Payoff Pod, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're posting more and more. We're kind of putting it out there. And so definitely interact with us. You know, we will always try and respond to everybody. And so we appreciate everybody kind of doing that. And then, of course, like, you know where to find us, Apple Podcasts. Leave those positive reviews. It helps us, you know, kind of keeps us in the algorithm and all that good stuff. And so we appreciate you guys kind of dropping those reviews and kind of the 5 stars and things like that. So, you know, appreciate that. Definitely spread the word, of course, too. Like, we know, you know, we're going to get our name out there as much as possible. And appreciate you guys doing that as well too. So you know, much appreciated. So Tom, wrap us up, take us home, give us the best there is.
Great. Yeah, Payoff Podcast, best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. But hey, thanks for joining us as always. Fun episode, fun match, continuing our SummerSlam theme, and we got some pretty good ones coming up too that I'm pumped about. So it's been a fun summer. We've covered a lot of really, really good matches, and it's been fun to watch these. So hope you're watching along with us. Thanks for listening, as always, to The Payoff.